You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
On this episode of the Ivy Podcast, I host Hernan Tabah, Global Chief Technology Officer and Digital Transformation Lead of Mondelez International, one of the world's largest snack companies with iconic global and local brands such as Oreo, Sour Patch Kids, Trident Gum, Halls, and many others. Hernan is responsible for the overall technology strategy for the company, providing leadership to groups that include executive members and expert technology specialists in shared services. As a CTO, Hernan is responsible for creating the company's digital strategy, enabling Mondelez to redefine its value creation model through forward-looking technology strategies. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and let me know your feedback in the comments below.
Hernan, can you please tell us a little bit more about Mondelez and your role within the organization that falls under your purview?
Yes, sure. So good morning. And my name is Hernan. I'm the global CTO for Mondelez International. So responsible for all the technology, strategy, architecture, and foundational components of digital transformation. I've been in Mondelez 5 years. Doing multiple roles from a CIO for Latin America, Global Head of Strategy Regions, and currently the Global CTO. Mondelez is a multinational company, $26 billion public company, and probably the largest snacking company in the planet. Multi-billion dollar brands, well-known for all of us, so Oreo, cookies, Toblerone, Cadbury chocolate, Halls among our big brands. So very fun place to work.
One thing for sure is that you guys probably have plenty of snacks for every meeting that you guys host.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have to be careful about that, but yes, it's fun to go to meetings.
I can only imagine. And where are you based at?
I'm based in Chicago. I'm originally from Argentina. But I've been around quite a while.
Excellent. Very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. So for global organization as Mondelez, digital transformation, supporting a myriad of business units is a massive undertaking for the technology unit. Can you share with us some of your initial cloud transformation strategies or any other digital transformation initiatives that you had initially had kickstarted and executed? And maybe talk a little bit more also about the approach for tackling such undertaking.
Yes, for sure. So, you know, the other day I was reading an article that was saying that many or more than 90% of the business and IT decision makers are struggling with a concept called hyper disruption. That is this complexity of consumers always asking for more, being more and more demanding, the need of the organizations to change their operating models and their business models on a constant basis, a marketplace that is very complex and the technology accelerating more and more, which posed a real challenge for organizations like us that we play across the globe with multiple consumers. So I think that the key thing is that the technology leaders, we need to be on top of those changes with a very sharp vision on how technology can help our organizations to navigate this hyper disruption. So we need to be very connected to the evolution of the industry, very well connected to the evolution of our own business strategy. The ecosystem, but because that has a massive implications on the previous two, and have a very clear view on how technology helped our organization to navigate that complexity. Now, we all know that there is a lot of marketing around a lot of those technologies, so it's a big responsibility for technology leaders also to evaluate the maturity and the trends of those technologies and which ones do you really need to apply to help your organization just clear that complexity? Sometimes it's very tempting to just play with new technology, and that makes sense. But when you're doing big investments, you need to be very careful on how you advise your organization, and you help your organization to navigate through that complexity. In particular, with cloud, cloud is at the center of our business strategy to support not only the current, but also the future business model, and definitely is at the center of our technology and digital transformation strategy. So when we start talking about cloud, we never start talking about the technology or the particular cloud provider. We start talking about why we're going to the cloud, what are the capabilities, and how those capabilities will add value to the organization. So through the flexibility, to the scalability, but more important, to the speed to introduce new services or new technologies that can help to add or to transform part of our value creation process. In Mondelez, we are in the middle of this migration, and we are applying cloud technologies across all the domains. So the ability to ingest high volumes of data from multiple sources to move to a hyper-segmentation of our consumers to do personalization scale, the ability to do planning to have a much more responsive and flexible supply chain, the ability to integrate with retailers or do IoT or edge devices to do smart shelving, or AI for instance, product development, or I don't know, digital twins for manufacturing, or rapid prototyping. So the benefits of the cloud are the flexibility, the speed, and also the acceleration of new capabilities. And we see the value across all the domains of the organization.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting, and thank you for summarizing that, because I can only imagine there's so much more to that, and especially when you go through some of the transformations as such for such a global organization. So definitely very insightful. So to take that a little bit further, migrating close to 10 SAP systems and 400 non-SAP applications in multiple regions, I'm sure there were some insightful lessons learned along the way. Curious, what were some of the failures that you had experienced, and why do you think you had failed in those particular areas, and how did you actually recover from those?
I will call them learnings. So yes, definitely. And actually, we're migrating more than 10. So 10 SAP systems is what we are migrating on our next regions, region as we expand through the geographies. We're probably going to double that. Last time we checked, we were probably among the largest cloud migrations on the CPG industry. So you can imagine the size and the complexity of that. And if mm-hmm. on top of that you put the effort that we are doing to re-architect some of the systems that we're migrating and re-platform some of them, it's a massive challenge, and definitely we have some learning. So a few of the learnings, if I can mention. So to be fair, the promise of the cloud is absolutely true, but with a big but, I would say, is you need to plan this very carefully. There are many important decisions that you need to be aware of and plan well in advance. You see, in the market, you have a lot of people today just making very high-level recommendations, just put it on the cloud. It's getting to the promised land, I would say, but it's not a walk in the park. You need to be very aware of some of the decisions you need to make well in advance in terms of your migration strategy, the architecture decisions that you're going to have to make. And those architectural decisions on how you're going to build your cloud foundation might get early benefits, but then will jeopardize potentially the speed or agility that you're going to have when you land on the new environment, on the cloud. So it is not a walk in the park. It's I think that people need to really understand why they are migrating, how they are migrating. It's not a cookie cutter approach. So the more you migrate and the more complex is your landscape, you really need to understand what are your system dynamics, what are the performance needs that you have from a business perspective, and then plan your migrations accordingly. Few people really have strong experience on doing these migrations at scale. So my first advice probably is take your time. It's the right decision from a strategic standpoint, but you need to make sure that you have a clear understanding from a technology architecture standpoint before embarking into the migration. The mm-hmm. second one, probably, if I can mention, is the operating model, and that one is key as well. One of the promise of moving to the cloud is this agility and almost real-time provisioning of compute and business capabilities. But if your business model and your operating model, it is not fully prepared to that, and you still have part of the organizations that are working on the old ways of working, all the speed and all the agility that you get on early stages will get slowed down and you lose value. One example is I can do provisioning of compute in hours, all right? But if after that I have part of the technology team, I don't know, security team, taking 2 weeks for SLAs for security scanning and configuration, you lost all the speed. And then if that goes to the network team and go on and so forth. So you need to define your operating model to make sure that you're taking advantage of the speed. The same when you go, for instance, for innovation. So you need to be mindful on how you're gonna set up your sandboxes so you can play with the technology, innovate there, without all the burden of the traditional approach of probably more production type systems. Mm-hmm. That's the second. And probably the third one is automation, and is automation. Is the only way that you can really do migrations at scale and repeating the quality again and again and again, it is through automation. It might sound counterintuitive at the beginning, but I truly recommend people to invest in automation at the very beginning to do the quality assurance, to do the build of your environment fully automated. At the end, you're gonna gain speed, but more important on early stages is the quality. And that's probably is the biggest learning that we had. We had to, rollbacks and change some strategies on the migration because we were probably going with a hybrid approach, a bit of automation, but also being more conservative and having a lot of manual configurations. And when you're doing this at speed and scale, automation is probably your best friend.
Mm-hmm. That's a great decomposition of, you know, lessons learned and some of the things that you definitely, I'm pretty sure, apply on any of the ongoing initiatives or any new undertakings that you guys go through. So thank you for sharing that. From your perspective, what are some of the trends in cloud computing that you will see will grow faster than other technologies in the next few years?
I think that overall in the technology trends, I think that the technologies that will probably continue to reshape the environment definitely are associated to cloud capabilities, cloud architecture, all the elements associated to AI, ML, and cognitive, and the platform economy. It's going to be growing faster than ever. To double click, I think that what we call hyper automation, again going back to my previous comment, mm-hmm. hyper automation is going to be key. Edge computing is going to grow and it's going to become very, very relevant to put more compute power and more intelligence on the end, on the edge. But also with 5G, I think that edge computing will become very, very relevant and drive a lot of efficiencies on areas where difficult to access or difficult to put computing power there. 5G will enable that. Autonomous things, I would say, is not only cars. I think that probably more about transportation industry, trucks, ships, even micro distribution with drones. I think that will be massive, and cloud is a big enabler of that. That will radically change logistics, and the big issue that we have today with the cost of logistics, and logistics will definitely influence the way we do business, the way we plan about our logistics, the pricing, and the consumer and customer experience. And the thing that I'm getting involved now, at least from a research standpoint, is human augmentation and all the mixed realities supported by AI and the brain-to-brain interfaces that will definitely change the way we interact with the environment. So think about a person working on a shop floor, in a factory, or in a warehouse, or professional services, or healthcare. That's going to be massive, and I think it's going to be big to keep up with that. We're working today on at least from Mondelez in a three horizon scenarios. I would say 0 to 2 years, 3 to 5, and 6 to 10, and across multiple layers. So pure technology view, so where we think the technology is going, business efficiencies and business operations, and business innovation. And we are doing that exactly to try to minimize the risk that I was referring before, in terms of understanding which are the trends, what technologies are mature enough, which technologies are the ones that are ready for prime time and really can help your business to do the transformation, versus other technologies that you need to keep an eye on. You can start playing, but it's not the right moment to invest and to go big on that. So you manage the speed, the risk, and the scope in some way. So that's where I think that we're going. But to be honest, I think that CPGs, as many of the big companies, we still have a lot of legacy and technical debt to fix that is slowing us down. And also we are putting a lot of attention, not only on the new technologies and very attractive technologies, but also we need to bring that technical depth to a good level. And that's why we're putting a lot of effort on architecture and reshaping those legacies.
Right. So kind of to take a little bit further on that technical debt aspect that you're talking about, prior to engaging on any major transformations, I would imagine, you know, every business needs to have certain characteristics or traits in place before embarking on such journeys. What would you say are the key characteristics that a digital business needs to have in order to be successful? And how can these organizations build and nurture such traits?
That's a good question. I think that the business to remain competitive and relevant, I would say, the key element that they need to have on their DNA is probably the ability to anticipate and to change really fast. I don't think that the catch-up game is good enough anymore. So the business that will really become digital business and will really succeed on that digital transformation journey are those that can really anticipate the changes. I think that the key barriers that I see probably today are more the inability or probably lack of confidence in some of the business on really driving the change where they need to change. So we're talking about this hyper disruption. No? So you need to understand all those components and you need to start deciding, okay, I need to change where. It's all across my business. It's in a particular process of my value chain. How deep that change needs to be. And I see a lot of organizations probably struggling to decompose that and making the right decisions about the change. And the other probably is referring to my previous point on the legacy, is just breaking this cycle of catch-up mode, both on the technology standpoint or catch-up mode with other companies or competitors that are being more aggressive or more innovative. And I think that's a big issue, because if you think about the acceleration that we were talking about in terms of the technology trends, business trends, and consumer expectations, the leaders, the one that can really crack that equation, will accelerate more and more and more. It's going to be exponential. And due to the complexity that we have to manage today with the combination of different business models, technologies, etc., if you're playing a catch-up mode, you're going to be slower and slower and slower. So the gap will grow. So from my point of view, to be successful, you need to really change your mindset, change your culture in terms of taking control risk, but really being able to anticipate changes on the industry, on your ecosystem, and how the technology can really help to accelerate and to drive value on that. At the end of the game, from my perspective, the transformation is all about people, no? And it's almost an art. So it's not that you can apply a template and say, okay, this company did a transformation in this way, so I will apply the template and we will do the same. That will never work, because you have a different culture, a different risk profile, different capabilities, different skills. So that will never work. And that's why we see a lot of companies trying to do transformation at scale and falling very short in terms of delivering the promise or the value. And connected to that, probably many companies, so you talk to a lot of colleagues and everyone is digital transformation. But when you step back, I said, what do you really mean by that? Why you need to transform? So where do you need to transform? How are you going to be reshaping your value creation model to really add value and not do a transformation for the sake of doing a transformation? What is the value that you're creating for the business? What is the new model that you're introducing? How faster you can deliver benefits for your consumers or for your customers? Just doing the transformation for the sake of transformation doesn't make any sense. And a lot of people get stuck into, we need to do digital transformation. And I hear a lot about, we need to be the Uber of our industry, or we need to be the Netflix of our industry. And I said, why? So you're a CPG company, you're selling shampoo, or you're selling, I don't know, why you want to be the Netflix? Right. What you can do is really try to understand, okay, what happened in the industry where Netflix was playing? And what have they done differently to disrupt that industry? What have they done in terms of operating model, in terms of culture, in terms of risk-taking, in terms of commercial agreements, and in terms of technology, how they're using right. those elements? And they said, hey, how can I apply that to some core processes of my organization and see if I can really drive the transformation? That makes sense. But just doing the Uber because you want to do the Uber on CPG, it doesn't, at least from my point of view. I hear that a lot.
Right. Yeah, and that's, you know, just, I guess, following certain trends and really sounds like a recipe for, you know, not much success there. I'm glad that you brought up a little bit from a standpoint of people transformation when we hear a lot about that digital transformation perspective, that at the end of the day, people don't transform. Doesn't matter how well your systems are and how well your processes in place are, if they're not well adopted by the users, it's not going to be much success. So from the candidate and the people that you surround yourself with, I'm curious, when hiring for your organization, for the candidates that interview with you, do you tend to get creative with your interviews? And if so, what do you look for in some of the responses when you get to talk to some of the candidates?
We try to be creative. I don't know how creative. Probably we need to ask the candidates. But probably it's a complex question, because depending on the profile that you're trying to recruit. If I have to make probably a definition, I would say that I always try to recruit on based on potential rather than experience. And again, all goes back to the speed of change. No, so if things are changing so fast, how you define experience? It is, in some roles could be 2 years, in some roles could be 10 years. So it's very difficult to define how you evaluate the experience. I always want to recruit, prefer to recruit based on potential. So learning agility, ability to change, probably ability to shape new views, different approach to risk. When you're talking about just people that will drive some of the strategies that we've been discussing. But not all the organization is in charge of doing that. So as a CTO, you're also responsible for some of core services and operations. And that's where experience really, really matters. So depending on the role, mm-hmm. I lean more towards potential and in some others, experience. So I'm not one to say that experience doesn't matter. Experience matters a lot. But in some areas, I prefer to take the risk on potential. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I answered your question, but...
No, you did, absolutely. And it's, it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint, especially when, you probably interview great mix and diverse, candidates from leadership positions to those that are joining, the lower ranks. So that's definitely, thank you for sharing that. So on that same note, given the current market conditions with some domains of IT in almost negative unemployment rates, such as information security, take an example, what are the most in-demand skill set that you guys are currently looking for some of your divisions, and what strategies have helped you to attract some of the top talent given how tight the labor market is, and it's almost a war for talent out there?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I think it is crazy out there. And we see a lot of people even dropping at the last stage because the demand is so mm-hmm. high that they are constantly receiving different offers. So key profiles that we're really focusing on, and I think that it's fully strategic for our agenda. I think that digital architects, so architects in general, digital architects, integration architects, cloud architects, cloud experts, not only from an infrastructure standpoint, but also to just move from probably traditional view of how you're going to use cloud to people that can really translate all that you're building on that new environment and just bundle them into products that they you can use to offer that to the sales team or to the marketing team and really accelerate the adoption of some of the use cases and some of that technology. That mindset is key. It is difficult to find. So architects is key. Cybersecurity, I think that you mentioned that all across the board, it's extremely difficult and in high demand. Analytics, good analytics people with domain expertise, with the ability to translate perhaps deep knowledge in terms of perhaps some models and the way to do predictive, etc., but how to translate that and how to engage with the business to align on some of the initiatives and drive the results out of that. And the last one, probably I would say this, as many companies are shifting from the outsourcing model to insourcing key talent in areas where they think they can get competitive advantage, software engineers are probably in high demand. So very good software engineers with very clear expertise on development frameworks and how to move part of the organization to DevOps capabilities are very critical and also in high demand.
Mm-hmm.
How we attract them?
I can... mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So how we attract them? I think that part of being out there, telling the story like we are doing now, being very active in social media, on what the company's doing or what we are doing in the technology function, I think it is very important to attract people, because that new talent is also thinking about working for the Googles of this world or the Amazon of this world. So we need to be very aggressive to show.
Right, and absolutely. And that's a, you know, definitely a smart thing to do, especially in this market. And, you know, even small exercises as this, as you and I talking on the podcast, is definitely, you know, helps for companies to relay the message in terms of what are the different initiatives in place, because a good portion of our audience, as an example, on the Ivy podcast are second year, you know, MBA students, mostly from Ivy League. And us, the company that I'm part of, we operate in this space in terms of not only management consulting, but also niche IT staffing, where we also partner with organizations on some of these very niche domain areas of information technology. So that's, I can definitely relate to some of the challenges that you're describing in terms of that high demand skill set and ways to attract them.
I have my arms open to receive them with pleasure.
yeah, absolutely. One of the last questions that I have for you, and I like to ask that all of the executives that I interview, because, you know, I would imagine you read a lot. And on that note, what are you currently reading, and what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why?
Okay. So I read a lot online. So I like to read a lot of articles. I'm very active online. So a lot of things about MIT, Spectrum, Harvard Business Review, trends from technology companies. I read a lot about that. In terms of books, I probably read multiple books in parallel, but I never read probably a book end to end. From beginning to end, I'm just jumping from chapter to chapter, just probably a bit of anxiety and lack of time.
I'm the same way.
I do that, and particularly when it is about business books or strategy books or technology books, I just try to navigate through what I really care about and then move on. So that's what I did. I'm currently reading probably one book that someone gave me, that is Tools and Weapons, How to Succeed on the Digital Age. So I'm just curious about that. So I usually recommend the last book that I read. I don't know if I have a short memory, but usually I recommend that. And I'm reading The History of Einstein for Kids. That's my bedtime book with one of my kids, Catalina. So that's probably what I'm reading.
That's very interesting. And kind of from the book perspective, one book that I always share with all of the guests on the podcast, and I'm definitely going to send you a copy of that, is actually from your fellow Argentine. His name is Claudio Fernandez Araoz. He's he's one of the partners at this global executive search company, and the book that I love, it's called "It's Not the How or the What, but the Who." Basically, succeed by surrounding yourself with the best. And he was one of the guest lecturers when I was at Harvard, and just some of the lessons that he had shared and strategies how to attract and retain the top talent is, you know, very interesting. So I definitely look forward to sharing that with you.
Of course, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Hernan, I know you're very busy. I really appreciate you finding time to jump on us, you know, with us on the Ivy podcast, and have fun skiing. And I hope we catch up soon again.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed the conversation. So looking forward for
Thank you for
again.
Listening to the Ivy podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.